Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Susan Otto, and I'm from the Office of the Federal Public Defender in Oklahoma City, and I represent the appellant, Esteban Rios Soriano. Rios is is his patronymic, so that would be the correct name to refer
and
to him.
What's
by
the status of this case now below? Has it changed at all since
the stay is in place?
And will
remain in place as long as this case is pending before this court.
But the further question, has the secretary decided whether he will be extradited?
No.
Okay. Isn't that a problem in terms of ripeness for us?
I anticipated that your first question would be, why don't I just go away and come back later? And that's a very cogent question to raise in this context. The reason why we believe this case is ripe at this time is because of the procedural posture in which it was presented to the district court. I don't think I've experienced an area of law that is more complicated or more fact-driven than habeas in this context. Immigration procedures, of course, have changed radically throughout the course of our history. And at this particular moment in time, we are attempting to balance all of our international obligations under the Convention Against Torture. The FAR Act has implication for us. And what we have here, which distinguishes Mr. Rios from Munaf and the cases that are cited by both sides, is that unlike those petitioners or those movements in those cases, Mr. Rios came into this country and pursued asylum on the exact reason he is requesting that the order of extradition be vacated.
Well, I mean, what does that have to do with jurisdictional ripeness, which is what the question is?
The question of jurisdictional ripeness turns on whether this person who is before the court has an identifiable ripeness, has both its constitutional and its prudential concerns. Can Mr. Rios demonstrate to the district court that he actually has something to complain about at this time, that it's appropriate for it to be decided at this time, and that it shouldn't be postponed for some other proceeding?
Well,
I
presume the government is going to agree that if extradition is denied, that you're going to have an opportunity to restate your petition for habeas at that point, and the case would at that point be ripe for consideration. I presume that the court will rule on it, and that the matter may or may not come up to us on further appeal. But up to that point, what do you want us to do? We're not going to rule on the merits of habeas matters that are not even ripe.
Well, you will not rule on the habeas matter. You will send it back to the district court
for
determination.
And ask the court to rule on something that isn't ripe. No, I mean, what case gives us authority to do that?
If I could, Your Honor.
Or better yet, what case requires us to do that?
If I could.
Uh-huh.
The issue of ripeness in this case has to be considered in the entire factual context. What will happen when the certificate of extraditability goes to the Secretary of State, who is the executive at this point in our history who makes this decision, no longer up to the Attorney General of the United States, the Secretary of State? Before the Secretary of State will be the certificate of extraditability and all of the paperwork that will be accompanying it, including, presumably, Mr. Rios's complaints about what he fears going back to Mexico. In this case, this is not an instance where a petitioner is complaining about something hypothetical, something theoretical, something where he would prefer not to go back to a country that has a judicial system of this particular type. No. Mr. Rios raised in his asylum proceeding, which is provided to him as a due process matter under American law, the right to proceed in front of an immigration judge and to establish that asylum in this case would be appropriate. The ultimate finder of fact on whether asylum should be granted or withheld is the same Secretary of State who presumably will pass on the extradition matter. By not allowing...
Have all of these matters been raised in your petition to the State Department?
I have not presented a petition to the State Department. For one thing, what proceedings will be transmitted to the Secretary of State? That, to me, isn't clear at all. Mr. Rios is pursuing
him. So at this point, there is no active due process hearing going on or any process going on before the Secretary?
Your Honor, if there is anything going on before the Secretary of State, I have not been advised of it.
Well, don't the briefs indicate that they set the asylum hearing off for a specific period of time to let the extradition proceeding to go forward? That's my memory from the brief.
Well, there are extradition proceedings that have been concluded. The complaint for extradition was filed March 5th of 2015. The immigration hearing was rescheduled for November the 29th, 2019, But that decision by the immigration judge was entered February 3rd, 2015, prior to the complaint for extradition being filed in the Western District of Oklahoma. The immigration proceedings were initiated by the government by filing this complaint in the Western District of Oklahoma. The asylum application was filed by Mr. Rios June the 12th, 2013, and is pending here in Colorado. He's represented by other counsel here in that matter. Yes, Judge.
Even if he were granted asylum, if he were extradited, if the Secretary of State decided to extradite him, the asylum grant is irrelevant, just like if the Secretary of State decides to extradite me as a U.S. citizen, it doesn't matter that you have asylum or you're a U.S. citizen. If you're extradited, you're extradited. So I don't really understand why you would go forward with the asylum when we don't even know yet whether he'll be extradited.
All right, let me answer that as succinctly as I possibly can here. The asylum proceedings will reach a conclusion in front of the immigration judge. That result of that will be transmitted to the Secretary of State, who will decide yes or no on asylum. You are absolutely correct. The Secretary of State could say, I'm going to extradite Mr. Rios. I don't care about the asylum. Even if there were no extradition, the Secretary of State could say, I'm not going to agree to the asylum recommendation. Those are separate things.
Well, our due process, they're separate. It's that extradition trumps asylum.
Extradition trumps asylum in this respect. It renders asylum moot, which is exactly why we're saying our issue is ripe at this time. Without the opportunity to proceed in our asylum case, our request for asylum, if he is extradited to Mexico, asylum is moot and cannot be raised again. It can't be reopened later. It's over. So even if this man were eligible for asylum, if he could make that case in the forum that American law provides for him to do that, he would be denied that. That is the essence of why we say we have a ripe claim now. He has initiated, under our American law, his right to seek asylum in this country for the precise reason we are requesting that he not be extradited. He is not complaining about the state of the courts in Mexico. He's saying that he will not live long enough to be tried there.
But those are we don't have, the courts don't have any authority over the Secretary's decision about extradition.
Well, there is a very interesting line of case law out of the Ninth Circuit, and I recognize it's the Ninth Circuit. But nevertheless,
we won't tell them you said.
Thank you. The Ninth Circuit certainly indicates in a series of cases they dangle out there that there might be some way where we could, or the courts could review this, and then they sort of candidly admit, well, we've said that in the past, but of course we've never actually done it. And even though there might be really strong humanitarian issues that are raised, is the Secretary of State's decision, is his decision to grant extradition even in the face of an asylum recommendation, is that reviewable? I think that's a very highly questionable moment, and the law is not clear on it.
I thought you said that the claim for asylum in its initial stage is the determination to be made by the Secretary of State.
Well, the asylum...
As a matter of first instance.
I'm sorry, no, sir. The asylum petition is pending in front of an administrative judge. It's pending in front of an immigration judge at this point. The immigration judge will make a recommendation to the Secretary of State, who will either agree, assuming that that he's able to establish a cause for asylum. He will either grant that, or he will say, no, I disagree with that asylum recommendation.
So it's in your interest to move the initial phase of the asylum claim through the immigration judge as expeditiously as possible.
Yes.
And is that happening?
Well, he is, as I mentioned, he is represented by counsel in that.
Well, that is no excuse, counsel. We're talking about a client. And the fact that he has two lawyers. You can't say, oh, I haven't talked to lawyer B, therefore I have lawyer A. No, I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way.
I left you with a misimpression of I have spoken with his lawyer.
Okay.
I have spoken with his lawyer about the bond that's in place, that he put in place, and we discussed whether to leave the bond in place.
Well,
it is.
But did you discuss with the lawyer what the status of the immigration judge proceedings are?
It's in the record. It has been continued to November the 29th of 2019. And that is in the record.
Then has that been communicated to the Secretary in the extradition proceeding?
It is my understanding that it has. I'm basing this on the documents that were presented.
If the Secretary acts or rejects that, it seems to me that it's a bit on the premature side. I suppose you get an A for diligence, but you don't get an A for federal jurisdiction and ripeness.
Your Honor, when you look, and let me just, I've got 2 minutes left, and I would like to leave a little time to respond to the government. I certainly understand that this is a steep hill and a heavy rock. The problem is that the state of the law is so unclear on these points, and the possibility of any court ever reviewing what the Secretary of State does is so speculative that I felt that it would not be appropriate for me, as the person representing Mr. Rios in this extradition proceeding, to knowing that there is an asylum petition pending in front of a judge, that there is a hearing set, albeit off to a certain extent. He has a lawyer. He is diligently pursuing this. And the only reason I mention the other lawyer is...
If you want to reserve time, you've got to reserve time. And as long as you keep talking, the clock keeps running. Do you want to reserve time?
Your Honor, I think I will.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
May it please the Court, William Glasser for the respondent, U.S. Marshal Charles Weeks. The District Court correctly concluded that the claim in this case was not ripe, and in any event, even if it were ripe, review of the Secretary's decision is not cognizable in this court. If I may first address a few of the factual issues.
We're not in the game of gotcha, so I take it your ambition here is not to extradite somebody who might be eligible for asylum without considering the asylum application. So have you communicated these thoughts to the government's lawyers?
Your Honor, I am one of the government's lawyers with the Department of Justice, and we're in contact with the Secretary of State. the State Department. So if I can just sort of explain how this works. Right now there's a stay in place, and right. So the Secretary of State
has issued the stay.
The district court issued the stay, Your Honor.
Right.
The secretary's ordinary policy is that when a stay is in place.
Sorry, I'm going to have you give your speech, but I've got to get some questions in my mind first. The stay is by the district court staying the Secretary of State from extradition pending further ruling, or what's the nature of the stay?
Your Honor, as I understand the nature of the stay is essentially that there is that an extradition cannot move forward at this time. In other words, that habeas relief has essentially been not granted, but that it would be inappropriate for him to be extradited at this time. So when there's a stay in place, the Secretary of State actually holds off on making its final surrender decision. In other words, it allows the habeas process to go through one time. And the way that this habeas process ordinarily works is it relates to the sort of limited habeas review of the extradition decision by the magistrate.
Right.
This is a little bit different because the claims here we have are not related to that ordinary habeas review. But once this court reaches a decision, let's say that this court were to issue a decision saying it's not right, the stay is removed, then the secretary would move forward.
Wait a second. Hold on. Not so quick. So you're saying that the stay is in effect pending the appellate resolution?
Of the current habeas petition. That's correct.
So it's not the stay is not as broad as you originally described it.
Oh, I apologize, Your Honor. That's correct. They would have to apply for a stay from this court under, I believe it's Rule 41. They could then seek a stay from the U.S. Supreme Court after that. But currently the stay is through the appellate process. So once this court were to issue a decision saying it wasn't right, the secretary would move forward with the ordinary process.
Now, the application for a stay before Judge LaGrange can be renewed on different grounds, assuming we dismiss on ripeness. A new petition for stay could come forward asking the Secretary of State be stayed until the resolution of the status case is resolved.
Your Honor, I don't think that would be appropriate because the district court would not be able to tell the Secretary of State what to not do in the meantime. The Secretary of State, just as a matter of policy, will not proceed with its surrender decision while there's a stay in place. But once that stay is removed, the Secretary will move potentially expeditiously.
So counsel's chamber of horrors is not as theoretical as possible. What could happen is if the stay is lifted on this appeal, then the Secretary of State could extradite tomorrow without ever having a determination made on the immigration status.
Your Honor,
legally
that is correct. However, the Secretary of State does have a policy that if the person subject to extradition raises a convention against torture claim in front of the Secretary and requests notice, then the Secretary will give notice when it has reached a surrender decision. At that point, there is at least a matter of a few days in which case they can file a second habeas petition seeking the relief that the petitioner seeks here.
Is that policy in the record for us to review?
Your Honor, it is not. I can point you to other cases where that's been done. The Ninth Circuit case, the origin of this is the Ninth Circuit's Trinidad case. There was a letter issued in that case. The Ninth Circuit said it's not sufficient. And since that time, the Secretary has tried to give a letter with more detail saying we've complied with the requirements of the Convention Against Torture. But in any event, the Chamber of Horrors is not as bad as it might sound because the Secretary's decision, as Judge McHugh pointed out in questioning, is not something that is subject to judicial review.
Well, but that is precisely the point, isn't it? That if extradition is ordered tomorrow, then everything else is mooted.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the Supreme Court had concluded in Munaf versus Guerin that these are matters that ordinarily are entrusted to the executive. The Convention Against Torture, to which the United States is a signatory, says and its implementing regulations under the FAR Act, say that the Secretary of State will consider whether or not someone is more likely than not to be tortured. The Secretary takes that responsibility very seriously. Any submissions relating to torture that are submitted by the petitioner will be reviewed by a legal advisor in the Department of State. And the decision to surrender, it must be made either by the secretary or the deputy secretary. So this is a decision made at the highest levels.
And does anything change if there's a decision granting an asylum in a different proceeding?
No, Your Honor. There is no difference. And the reason is, as you pointed out in questioning again, the extradition treaty applies even to United States citizens. And so simply because someone receives asylum from an immigration court does not preclude the Secretary of State from complying with the extradition treaty and extraditing that person. Again, there is a second layer of review, though. The Secretary of State has to make a determination under the implementing regulations of the FAR Act and the Convention Against Torture that that person is not more likely than not to be tortured in the receiving country.
Let me make clear what the government's position is. If they find him extraditable and certify it to the Secretary and the Secretary buys into that, the Secretary has no requirement to even hold hearings under the Convention on Torture. Can extradite him without even looking at the substance of the Convention on Torture argument.
Your Honor, that's not quite correct. So it is correct that the Secretary need not hold a hearing. The case is well established. Cases are well established.
Is not required to otherwise look into it aside from a hearing.
No, Your Honor, that is incorrect because the regulations specifically say that the Secretary will undertake to review a torture convention claim. So in order to comply with its regulations, the Secretary must, in fact, consider those Convention Against Torture claims, but need not do so in the context of a hearing the way that might take place in immigration court. And that, as I understand it, is the crux of Mr. Rios's claim, is that he has a right to pursue the asylum claim in immigration court. But the Board of Immigration Appeals has consistently had a policy since the 1960s that it will stay the immigration proceedings when there is an extradition case pending, because it recognizes that a decision by the Secretary will moot the immigration proceedings.
But it seems to me that you do have a chicken and egg situation to this extent, that it would be relevant to the Secretary of State on the extradition proceedings to determine any ruling of the immigration court on the very question of torture.
Your Honor, it's possible that the immigration judge's decision could assist the Secretary of State. However, the person subject to extradition can submit all of the same materials, I guess aside from live testimony, to the Secretary of State in support of the Convention Against Torture claim. So the Secretary can access all of those same materials. And in fact, in this case, although Mr. Rios hasn't made that application to the Secretary, the government undertook to forward the record in the underlying immigration case to the Secretary of State in order that the Secretary would have all of those allegations before it. So
your representation to us as an officer of the court is that the record of the immigration proceedings as it exists today has already been forwarded to the Secretary of State.
Yes, that's my understanding, Your Honor, yes. I don't know that I've double-checked that with the Secretary.
Will you confirm that to us by letter?
I can do that, yes, Your Honor.
So that we can make a determination of that fact.
Yes, Your Honor. So the key point here, though, is getting back to the parade of horribles, is that even if there weren't notice given that would allow Mr. Rios to bring yet another habeas petition, the courts of appeals have unanimously agreed that there is no substantive review of the Secretary of State's Convention Against Torture decision. The one court that has said that there is some level of review is the Ninth Circuit in the Trinidad case en banc, and that court said that the extent of the liberty interest in that case is that there needs to be something signed by the Secretary of State or his or her designee saying that the Secretary has complied with the Convention Against Torture. That is the letter that I mentioned earlier. That's the effect of that letter, is to say we've undertaken review of your Convention Against Torture claim and have concluded either that you're not more likely than not to experience torture or that whatever you're likely to experience doesn't meet the definition of torture under the convention. So that is the extent in any circuit of the review. Now, the D.C. Circuit and the Fourth Circuit have both concluded that there's simply no jurisdiction at all. There's not even that narrow liberty interest to seek review. That's, in the government's view, the correct interpretation. But even under the most lenient standard that exists out there in the Ninth Circuit, there would be no further review that could be sought. So we think that this case should be decided based on ripeness, but this isn't the ordinary ripeness case where we say, good claim, come back another time. This is a case where we say, it's not ripe, but in any event, you can't come back another time because it's simply not reviewable. And again, to the extent that that sounds harsh, again, I would point out to the court that the Secretary of State has an obligation to undertake this extensive review. The immigration judge is merely a member of the executive branch, certainly far further down the chain than the Secretary of State. And the Supreme Court has reaffirmed in Munoz versus Guerin that these are matters that are ordinarily left up to the executive branch because, and this is important, the executive branch can seek reassurances from Mexico in this case that Mr. Rios will have certain protections that might prevent torture from occurring. The immigration judge is not in a similar position to seek reassurances, but the Secretary of State has the power of the federal government, the power of our treaty relationship with Mexico and can seek reassurances to ensure that he is not tortured. If the court has no further questions, again, we've submitted the cases that support the contention that this is unripe. The Third Circuit and Eleventh Circuit have both reached that conclusion, and we think that's the appropriate conclusion here.
Is there any authority to the contrary from any circuit?
No, Your Honor, not that I'm aware of. Again, in the past, the government has actually sort of sought to take this past the ripeness stage because it was to our advantage to not have to go through multiple layers of habeas review. But we recognize that the best answer is that it's not ripe at this point.
And you'll submit that letter to us?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I believe it's important to remember that both the Convention Against Torture and FAR have recognized that the Constitution still applies and that habeas is still a viable mechanism for looking at this. It is still a viable method for seeking review. Of an extradition, correct.
Order.
Correct. And the extradition order will be final when the Secretary of State determines that extradition.
That proposition can be raised before the court in habeas proceedings.
It certainly can.
At an appropriate time, correct?
It certainly can. Now, I think we have a clear indication that the government is going to say the only thing we'll be talking about are the niceties of extradition. Anything about CAT, anything about the Convention Against Torture is not reviewable. Then we'll be arguing about the suspension clause in our next habeas proceeding. And the 5 seconds that
yes, no, if you need additional time, it's fine. My point earlier was people will spend 2 minutes telling us that they want to reserve time instead of just doing it. That was my point. So extend another minute, please, to counsel. And if you need more, ask for it, and we'll discuss it.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would caution against reading Munaf too broadly. Munaf and Omar arose under some very, very highly specific circumstances, under a very specific relationship between the two sovereigns. I think it's dangerous to extrapolate too far in habeas proceedings and in extradition proceedings when we're talking about status of forces agreements, multinational agreements, how we are in a country and why we're in that country. I think the safer course to set here, to keep from going over the line with the Constitution and the rest of our body of law that we have to apply, the treaty to extradite a person to Mexico or any other place, does not supersede American law. We have to read all of our obligations in concert with each other. And in this case, The government may say, well, this asylum, it's just further down the executive chain. It doesn't matter what that immigration judge says. It doesn't matter what happens there. Don't worry, we're going to send the cold record that has been presented up to this point by the attorney who is representing him, and he does have a lawyer in that venue. But what has been able to happen at this point is simply the pleading stage. Everything else that has to do with this case, everything else that has to do with his claim, still awaits that final hearing in front of the immigration judge. And I believe that if our obligations under the treaties, our obligations under international law, are to have meaning and to have content, then when the United States of America tells people that they come in and apply for asylum, that has to be more substantive than just the filing of the papers and a comment that that's further down the chain of command in the executive branch. If it's true that the Secretary of State's determination of CAT will not be reviewable on habeas, if that's the way this goes, then that means Mr. Rios' only opportunity to make his record, only substantive challenge to his extradition on humanitarian grounds, will be in the immigration proceeding. And that's what we're asking for, and that's why we believe it's ripe at this time.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Submitted. Counsel are excused. And the court is